Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Combat Spotlight. We just made it through winter, and today's first day of spring. It's beautiful outside, and to start our show off, you know, like always, I'm with my co-host Luke Dibbo.
Yeah.
What's going on, man?
Not much, not much. Dude, it's mostly same as usual.
Yeah, we finally made it through winter, dude.
Yep.
Spring is here, and it is beautiful. Oh, man. Anyone else listening to this that had a rough winter, it is over with. Put it behind you, you know, nice, crappy, smelly air, you know. Let the dogs out. Let the baby mamas out. It's all good. It's all good. Anyways, dude, have you caught the fights from this past weekend, man?
I was able to only just catch the main event.
Well, the main event was all you really needed to see. Anthony Pettis is back. Anthony Pettis is back and looks better than ever. They keep throwing around in different divisions. The man went from 145 to 155. Now he's fighting at 175. What's going on with 175? Everyone's jumping up from 155 to 170 these days. Do you think it's healthier for the sport, or do you think this is something weird?
I think it's healthier, especially, like, you know, no more weight cuts. Like, guys don't have to literally shave off all that weight now, like, at the beginning of camp, like, to fight. They can actually, like, fight close to their walking weight now.
Do you think the walking weight's even better now? Or I personally, I'm starting to lean more towards don't cut weight now.
No, that's what I mean. Like, just stop cutting weight and just start fighting in your natural, like, your natural weight. Like, if you're at 205, go ahead and fight at, like, 205.
Like, where's this advantage even coming from? I know,
or at least
the mentality came from wrestling.
Or if you're 205, you know, like, go to 195. Like, do at least, like, a 10-pound weight cut. Like, don't go, like, 20 or
10 pounds sounds pretty legit, but when you're depleting your body of, like, nearly, like 5% of its mass, whatever, that's crazy. That is just absolutely crazy. Mm-hmm. But we have a big sample to take from, a big pool sample to just go in and dive in and take some examples from, like 1FC. We brought this up back in the past. I think it was our very first episode where we were talking about the effects of weight cutting. Mm-hmm. And 1FC went ahead and took the initiative of completely trying to, like, cut out weight cutting from their sport. They moved all their champions from their current walking around weight, the divisions they would fight at. Let's say you're the champion at 155. We're going to move you up 10 pounds, like Luke said. We're going to take that 10-pound cutoff. You're now champion of 165. You know, how about that? And it's worked out great. I mean, like someone like Ben Askren, he's not really a big dude. You wouldn't see him fighting at 185. But he had to defend his 170-pound belt at 180, and he looked really great. He was fighting some crazy dudes. You look at his Luis Sapo fight. It was one of his only fights he's really struggled in. That fight took place at 180. I can't imagine him taking the bombs that he endured in that fight, taking them out 170, depleting himself of brain juice, of mm-hmm. spinal fluids, you know, the cushions. I can't imagine someone taking big shots and getting rocked like that and enduring it. I like using examples of people enduring kind of like big shots without the weight cut, because it kind of adds on to, like, you could take a guy that has cut tremendous weight and they get suddenly KO'd out of nowhere, you know? Why is that happening? Probably due to the dehydration. Probably due to less cushioning in the brain. The brain smacking around inside of the head after it takes a hit. That energy has to go somewhere.
Prime example, TJ Dillashaw versus Cejudo.
So instead of moving up a weight class, let's look at some of the examples moving down, like TJ Dillashaw. Couldn't last more than 30 seconds. Pretty crazy.
Looked really horrible after his weight cut. Looked very depleted and malnourished.
And now we found out he tested positive for a little something.
Oh, yeah, that too. He's dirty.
He's dirt. There were people calling him out for a while, too. I would not believe it due to him being one of my favorite fighters. They were suspicious of him for so long, and you caught him. You caught the snake. Mm-hmm. Like
Connor says, the snake in the grass.
He's a snake in the grass. And on The Ultimate Fighter, they were calling him a snake, and who's it? Cody Garbrandt. His former teammate was saying, you're on something. He's like, you showed the whole gym how to do it, which doesn't look good for, well, they changed their name to Team Alpha MMA now. It doesn't look good for that team, you know, if you're saying you showed the team how to do it. Well, the dude's not too smart if he's saying something like that.
No, he's not.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, TJ Dillashaw just not lasting long. I don't know. Some other examples of, like, people moving up, though, I have a better sample of that. Moving down isn't too common. Maybe like Michael Bisping moving down two weight classes, finally. Not two weight classes. Yeah, he started off as a heavyweight, didn't he?
No, he was...
Or was just 205?
I think he was just light, then he went to, yeah.
I don't know if he started off as heavyweight. Yeah, so 205, he was successful in dropping down and winning a belt. It's happened. And then you have some fighters that just keep dropping weight, like Kenny Florian. and he just could not find success. But then we see the opposite happening of people like Donald Cerrone moving up and going on like a 3-fight win streak, or Ben Henderson trying it out and leaving the UFC division on a win streak. They try it out. Not everyone succeeds, though. I remember Ben Henderson trying it out, and he couldn't last long in a Bellator's welterweight division. I don't know if they have the same kind of killers that the UFC does. They're still killers.
Well, Cormier was able to do it, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, you mean move back up?
Yeah, move back up. Like, to,
he did make a return,
went,
though.
He went up. Well, he started at heavyweight in Bellator. Or no, Strikeforce.
Strikeforce
was yet in heavyweight. Then he had to move down. Well, didn't have to, but he moved down for the UFC.
He kind of chose to because he didn't want to clash with Cain Velasquez, too.
Yeah.
Because Cain was the reigning champ at the time he came over.
And his teammate at AKA.
Yep. Because for a while, Cormier was actually the wrestling coach. Then he's like, why don't I try this out? I didn't make the Olympics. I could put my foot in this and try it out. But yeah, that's a good example, too. Sometimes you have these fighters that just go on like win streaks, and they can't hold it together, though. Like Rafael Dos Anjos, for example. He was fighting at 155 for a while, and then he decided to move up.
Oh, he was doing great when he moved up, and then all of a sudden just came to that roadblock.
I don't know what the roadblock is, though. It could just be dealing with the best of the best. Personally, I like to think maybe through experience, through training and stuff, too. It's like at a certain point, when skill is in match, then attributes take over. Attributes such as like size, speed, strength. That's when those are like at the lowest level, when you don't have skill match, the attributes are going to take over. But when the attributes are even, that's when the skill is going to take over. Now, who's the better skilled man? So I'm starting to think that at a certain point, maybe size does come into play, and the fighters that are going to move up in weight class will eventually run into someone that's doing the right weight cut, not completely dehydrating themselves. You know, the champions of the division, basically, the guys that have it unlocked, they know how to cut the weight properly. They know how to show up and fight at their designated weight class. I don't know. I don't have really statistics to kind of prove that. It's just more of something I've kind of felt like through training.
It seems like it seems like a logical science, though. Like,
it does, doesn't it?
Like when you put like just comparing things and you see the things, like, yeah, you could logically like say something like that because like it seems.
Like
it seems very possible.
Like Genki Sudo fighting Butterbean back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
You have a small, what do you fight at, 155? A 155er fighting super heavyweight. You know, Butterbean, the, what's his name? What's his English name? Esh? Eric Esh?
I think Eric Esh, yeah.
Something like that. You know, in boxing, they have all kind of super heavyweight divisions. In the UFC, I think Josh Barnett was the only person that competed in a super heavyweight fight in the UFC. It was a one-off, though. And now you have to fight under 265,
mm-hmm.
which is probably why Brock Lesnar is taking a little long. He has to shed some mass and, you know, wean off the stuff before he can come back. But
well, of course, yeah, you have to make sure you're clean, you know?
Make sure you're clean. I trail off, though. But yeah, Genki Sudo against Butterbean, that's a good example of attributes being canceled out due to skill. The skill was able to take over because there was such a huge discrepancy in skill. Whereas if you have the skills matched, that's where I feel attributes can take over.
Yep.
That's kind of my point of view on this. But like I said, I don't really have anything to quite prove that, though. But I do have some examples of some people moving up, though. You have guys that moved down. I mean, not moved down. You have guys that were from a lower weight class moving up and finding success, actually. Anthony Pettis, we started the show off saying it.
Yep.
Spectacular knockout over Wonder Boy. And did you even give him a chance?
Not even, especially how the fight was like looking in the beginning. Like Wonder Boy was totally in control. Like Pettis was, it looked like it was really like having a hard time finding his range.
He kind of did.
And trying to like close the distance. Like it seemed like Wonder Boy was just keeping him like at bay, like almost the whole fight. Till like he had him backed up against the cage and he just pulled the trigger. You seen him plant his foot on the cage, throw it a Superman punch, and it's weird. It didn't look like it was like that hard either till you see the slow-mo replay.
It was so flush, though.
Yeah.
It was a clutch knockout win. Mm-hmm. Perfect. But I want to dig in a little into that. What I've seen through my eyes, you know, what I've seen was that Pettis was setting that knockout up very early in the fight. He came out with, I thought he'd come out with, this is a man that started off in traditional martial arts like Taekwondo. and received his black belt early on, then moved over to try kickboxing and MMA at Rufus Sport. So I kind of expected maybe a traditional stance, but he came out in more of a Muay Thai stance.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was going to kind of play one
hand straight
game.
Up in his face, the elbows like right, like out, ready to like throw.
It's really cool to see the Muay Thai style against karate style, and to see the Muay Thai style prevail. That was really cool. The game plan was kind of use a high guard.
It prevailed, honestly, I think, on like a really well-timed like shot. Other than that, like karate was like in most of like the control.
It was. I feel Stephen Thompson's karate was only showing through the bursts, going in those little blitz of like, you know, like showing little glimpses of success here and there. But Pettis, if you pay close attention, was using a high guard. Sometimes the punches would get through, but no matter what would happen, Pettis would bite down on his mouthpiece and just go ahead and counter him with leg kicks. And the leg kicks after leg kicks started adding up. So then I feel towards the end of that round, when Stephen Thompson was kind of stalking him and gave him that sidekick to push him into the fence, he couldn't really retreat like he normally does. The movement was taken away from him due to the leg kicks.
Yeah, that's the one thing I noticed about karate and taekwondo stances is they really have no defense against leg kicks.
Because they're so heavy on that lead leg.
On that lead leg, yep.
And then you'll have some coaches that tell you to be lighter on the lead leg, be a little heavier on the rear leg.
Mm-hmm.
There's some people that vary between that. Maybe you want to be more bouncy on the rear leg so you can retreat.
Or if you just maybe you just want to be balanced on both, then you know if you know how to shift your weight, like you know, like,
yeah,
depending what you're gonna throw.
But this has been ingrained in a Stephen Thompson since he was a young man.
He's a karate black belt. You know, yeah. His stance like requires him to.
So I feel
move around in that fashion and also counter strike and throw. He strikes.
But in order to counter-strike, you need to have your legs underneath you.
Yep.
And it was very smart of Anthony Pettis to take that from him. Mm-hmm. That was his weapons, you know, the movement, the countering. So Pettis decided to counter him himself. I'm going to keep my hands up high, and when I see some movement coming in, I'm going to take those legs from you. And then I felt like Stephen Thompson had nowhere to go when he pushed Pettis into the cage. And then Pettis used the momentum of him getting pushed into the cage, bounced back, Superman punch into the clutch knockout win. Fantastic, man. Pettis, when he's on, is on. That's someone that's just guaranteed fireworks. Even when he loses, it's spectacular fashion. Mm-hmm. Fight of the year against Tony Ferguson in his last fight. And then his only other loss before that was Max Holloway. The best of the best.
Well, don't forget was it WEC?
WEC, where he did the Showtime kick.
The Showtime kick. He still lost that fight, but still, though, like, he's forever... like immortalized because of
The Showtime kick. He had won the fight. It was his fight after that UFC debut, kind of exposed by Clay Guida.
Oh yeah.
I was so hyped on Anthony Pettis for so long. If you're an old school listener to this, you probably remember the old MTV show True Life.
Yep.
And they featured Anthony Pettis on there. I was so young in high school. I remember watching that and I was just like, this guy's incredible. And he's still pretty young too. He's only entering his prime right now, maybe reaping the benefits of his prime. Which is probably why he can endure such wars and come back looking good every showing.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Pettis, man, don't go anywhere, dude. 170, okay. We're arguing about weight cutting, but should Anthony Pettis actually stay at 170? Do all the arguments...
I think so. You know, he's winning. He's showing success.
He is showing success, but will the skill be matched at a certain point where the attributes can take over? Like I've said before, some people can move up, go on maybe a 3-fight win streak, and then
maybe
fall
we'll
to the
just
very
have
best.
To see, we'll have to see who he gets paired up against next.
True.
Is he going up against Askren? Is he going against Covington? Or
never
is...
Askren, because Askren's one of those Rufus Sports guys.
Oh yeah,
he's one of those. Totally I'm not going to fight my teammate.
Yeah.
I can't fight my teammate. He knows too much about me. Probably going to whoop me. Nah, I'm just kidding. There's so much going on behind the scenes.
Might even be the opposite way around.
Oh, who knows? Maybe he has his number. But what's crazy. I did mention this on the last show, is that...
Imagine we get Pettis versus Covington.
That'd be such a weird matchup. But Covington's not that big. He looks like a lightweight fighting at welterweight.
Yeah.
But his wrestling is just so dominant, he's able to compete with all of them, which could be attributes being canceled out due to the skills. You know, that's just one of my views on it.
Because I'm sure Covington's going to have to fight somebody before he can... Or either they're just going to throw Covington right at Usman right away.
I think they're going to throw Covington at Usman.
Right away, so yeah,
interim
champ
lost,
versus the real champ.
If Usman would have lost, I would have thought that...
Covington was fighting Woodley right away.
Because he had the whole interim belt, too.
Yep.
how come you're throwing Usman in the way when, you know, Covington had the interim belt?
And then they stripped him of it? And he's healthy, too.
They stripped him of it, or they didn't strip him of it?
No, no, he still has it.
He does still have it, right?
Yeah, it's still there.
That's just so weird. Like, Tony Ferguson
winning
the interim belt.
Only Dillashaw's been stripped so far.
Yeah. Well, I think Tony Ferguson was stripped, too. So when he fought Conor McGregor, there was no... I mean, not... When he fought Anthony Pettis, there was no belt up for grabs.
Yeah, he got stripped of the interim title, and... Well, now it's just, there's just, Khabib's just the champ.
Yeah, know? There's only one undisputed champ, no interim belt in the 155. But in the 170, I didn't understand why Usman was jumping ship. Why Usman, skipping line. That confused me so much. You win a belt, you think you've earned the shot, and then, no. This other dude's going to fight before you, this guy that hardly anyone knows, but it ended up being the right call.
Yeah, it was absolutely the right call because Usman showed the world that, like, hey, look, he beat the crap out of Woodley.
He did.
He really did.
I like to correct myself, too. I don't know what I was thinking.
He dismantled Woodley.
He did dismantle him. He picked him apart for 5 rounds and just kept digging into that body, relentless pressure, taking him down at will. It was crazy. But I think last episode I said he had finished him. I don't know what I'd watched or something, but I thought he finished him for whatever reason. No, I went all 5 rounds. It was very entertaining, all 5 rounds, though. I had to rewatch this to ingrain it in my head, though. And the main event, too. I think I had said that fight was finished, too. That fight had went 5 rounds, too, but John Jones had thrown...
It was another dismantlement of Anthony Smith.
It was definitely a dismantlement, but he had thrown an ill-advised, illegal knee at him.
Yeah, I remember seeing that.
That's where I thought the fight had stopped. Yeah. I was out with some buddies, so
I thought it was over. I'm like, oh, here we go again. And I was going to post a funny status. I'm like, the only way John Jones ever loses is by DQ.
Yep. DQ, though, I could kind of side with him, but this one would be like, no, dude, you had it all and you blew it. You blew it. Well, this is just God testing him. There's another one of God's tests.
Well, who knows? Maybe I'm right. Maybe the only way to beat John Jones is by DQ.
The only person to beat John Jones is John Jones at this point.
Yep.
You know, getting stripped of the belt due to outside reasons, that is a first in the UFC.
Getting DQ'd in a fight for illegal elbows.
True.
It's like, yeah, his only greatest enemy is himself.
Is himself. You could technically call him undefeated. He's never, unbeaten. Yep. He's never been beaten inside the cage. So he still has that record to kind of throw around with. He's never been finished, but he does have a loss on his record. Another guy like that is Greg Hardy. They just said that Greg Hardy will be co-maining eventing Jacare Souza with Yoel Romero in Miami, Florida. So I guess they really want to promote Greg Hardy.
That would be a really good trip.
to go to Florida to watch it.
Go see Florida and go see UFC in Florida. Nice weather, great middleweight bout.
Yeah, good rematch too. That rematch, I felt, was a bit of a robbery for Jacare.
Yo, did you hear who's coming in Ottawa?
Oh, the main event. They finally announced it. Yeah. Donald Cerrone's getting the main event against Ally Aquinta.
Yeah, Ally Aquinta.
Good. That's such a good fight.
It's a very good fight.
Did you go to the last Ottawa card?
No, I was going to, but scheduling conflicts couldn't allow me to go. And I actually financially was able to go. That's what disappointed me. I'm like, I can afford it. I just can't go. This time, I think I'm going for sure.
Oh, man, we're in like... opposite ships. I can't go this time, but I did go last time. So if you go, man,
but yeah,
dude.
But when it got announced, I was like, ooh, Cowboys coming to Canada?
Yeah.
With Aliquinta? Yeah. Like,
again, I got to say, because the last time in May, also Chris Weidman was there last May. He did not fight, but he was there. And now Aliquinta is there and they're teammates. And yep. I mean, New York's not too far away from Ottawa. So it kind of makes sense that they throw Aliquinta on there. He could have some hometown dudes like driving out there.
It's Cerrone that's the big like
the draw,
the eyebrow raiser. Yep.
Well, okay.
Especially Aliquinta too. If you know the UFC and you're an MMA fan, you know he's a very talented and skilled fighter, and he's on a tear right now too.
Went 5 rounds with Khabib, was able to stop a lot of the takedowns and maybe even steal a round from him.
Yep.
I think the judges gave all 50-45 to Khabib, but those last few rounds where he was just able to stuff the takedown and control it, he was eating a lot of jabs in the face, but it looked like he was in control, taking the center and having Khabib retreat.
But his last fight against the Motown Phenom was great.
Yeah, that was a banger. Mm-hmm. Back and forth, went all 5 rounds too. And now Kevin Lee's moving up to another example.
Oh, okay.
He's got a fight against RDA. Then.
Ooh.
I'm not sure when it's scheduled, but I heard they were pairing those two up. So Rafael Dos Anjos against Kevin Lee now. Both of them are former 155ers. They're going to meet at 170. So let's see how this weight cut affects the performance. Mm. There is no weight cut now. Mm. Well, a small weight cut, very small weight cut.
That's what I have to say to that. That's interesting.
It is interesting because, well, okay, you have a wrestler and then you have a guy that's like pretty good at pressuring. So now they're going to clash. They're going to clash, you know, a movable object against an unstoppable force. You know, what's going to happen? I don't want to jump into that. That's kind of far. I'm not going to put my prediction glasses on just yet. That's way too far out of my scope. But some other good samples of some fighters moving up and finding some success, you know, like Amanda Nunes, when she jumped up from 35 to fight Cyborg at 45, came out of nowhere and just shocked the world. Like, well, they say that women have harder weight cuts than the males. I can't really argue for this. I don't have experience with this really. If I ever competed, I never really cut weight. I would just skip breakfast. So I don't really. They said that women have less body percentage water as us as males. So you could say that maybe the weight cut affects them a little harder than us.
It does because we have that muscle mass and muscle really burns fat a lot more faster. So yeah, we actually have a faster time like burning fat than as females do.
Yeah,
and like getting rid of weight.
Yeah, they have to hold water for different reasons than males do, and you know, due to childbirth, there's different, you know.
It's just naturally easier for us than them. That's why, like, you see women like at the gym more often and working like twice as hard as like men because they kind of have to.
Yeah, yeah, it kind of makes sense when you think of like.
It's like I could skip the gym for like a week and like I'll still have like the same like body, you know, like it's fairly like not.
It's not going to affect you as much as it's going to affect like a female.
Yeah,
to keep her gains.
You know, messing up their metabolism like right away and like shit goes out of whack.
So I don't know if this is really going to help the argument or aid the argument in reducing weight cutting, but Amanda Nunes was able to find success going up and fighting Cyborg.
Oh, and she found great success.
Great success. No, she sure did. Like, man, that is one of the biggest upsets in the UFC history, I got to imagine. I got to put that up there with Ronda Rousey losing for the first time. Because Cyborg, although she
actually,
had a loss on her
record. I think one of the biggest upsets like ever, and like we talk about all the time, is Matt Serra knocking out GSP.
Yeah, okay. But if that's number one, then this has to be two or three.
Yeah, that's number two.
Yeah. Then maybe Rousey could go under three.
Yeah, Rousey versus Holm. That was, oh my God. I remember watching that in my friend's living room and like my jaw hitting the floor. I'm like, did that just happen? Like,
yeah.
No way.
It was, I can't get into it. I'm still a big Rousey fan.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of her WWE ventures, but
oh, man,
Strikeforce, man.
That meme that's like, well, it's not a meme. It's like screenshots from a Twitter post with her and Travis Brown. And it's like her and Travis Brown looking at the camera and it's like they all look serious and it's like the caption is, what are you looking at? Like, and you could tell that's like the tone like they put it in.
Yeah.
And the comments are brutal, man. Like some people are like, I'm looking at two washed up UFC fighters. And like just stuff like that. Two people who couldn't make it into UFC and like somehow like look embarrassing in the WWE and like the comments were horrible, but gold.
That's Twitter comments, you said?
Yeah, Twitter
never
comments.
Read the Twitter comments. Oh, Twitter's so toxic when it comes to celebrities or athletes.
Even on Facebook too, like it was reshared on Facebook, like, and like it was all like screenshotted next to each other, like the picture with the comments, like,
yeah,
like on the right was one and on the left was like the other, and oh, it was gold.
Twitter's so
I felt
toxic
bad.
I
felt bad for them, but at the same time, like it's hilarious. Did you see that like footage of like Ronda Rousey bringing Travis Brown? Like it was hilarious.
I don't think so.
She's like talking to him like, you know what, like the stanchion there that separates like the ring and like the crowd. Like he's there like on the crowd side and they're talking to each other. And there's like a few security guards like and like the refs like around there. And one like tries to like grab her and like it's like Travis Brown and her like fake punching them like all and like pretending to beat them all up and
like using flurries or using like MMA moves,
like no flurries, like you know how like you see the WWE people like punching each other. It was like that, and like it was
cringy.
It's very cringeworthy.
Oh,
very very very
the
very
sound
cringeworthy.
Cringe. Well, it's not like we have a clip of it or anything, so we don't gotta induce cringe with you guys.
We don't have visuals yet, but when we do, we can incorporate that stuff into our show. And we can actually show you people.
That'll be the first couple show.
I can't actually wait to show people stuff like that. It's going to be hilarious.
We'll show you what's on our minds rather than describing what's on our minds. We'll show it to you.
We'll actually show you the visual where you can you could share our visions, basically, and we can all facepalm together. Or we could actually bask in honest if it's legit martial arts.
Yeah. Legit martial arts, man. This weekend, for example, with Stephen Thompson and Anthony Pettis. The Muay Thai against the karate. I like those style matchups, man. Do you remember when Shogun fought Machida back in the day? The first time, not the second time, at the Bell Center. I think they fought at Vegas the first time. Shogun comes out in his typical Muay Thai style, and it was another Muay Thai against karate style, too. Mm-hmm. That fight didn't have the ending in the first time they went at it. It went 5 rounds. Very controversial 5 rounds where everyone thought Shogun won, but he did not win. Then they rescheduled it. They brought it to Montreal. And Shogun showed the world, I'm the champ. And then John Jones showed him, nah, I'm actually the champ. Just a fight later. Brutal. That's the kind of sport we're in. That's the kind of sport we're covering. That's the kind of sport that you listeners love. And it's brutal. Let's be real. This is a brutal sport.
It's a very brutal sport.
Just preparing for it seems to be brutal.